Now, this is Afternoon Pancakes. This is season 2. This is episode, I believe, 13?
Yeah, maybe.
I believe this is 58 overall. We did 45 last season, so we're getting close to our 60th episode, by the way.
Yeah, that seems pretty cool. 16.
My name is Jared. I'm here with my good friend, Stephen Reed. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing well today. How are you?
Doing good. We were just chatting before we started a podcast today. Please wear a mask. Let's just leave it at that. It's not a political statement. Let's just leave it at that. Steven, the Colts got a big win on Thursday last week. They beat the Titans 34-17, man.
Crushed the Titans. It's one of those things. It was such a huge win for the team and to move to first place, tie with Tennessee in first place in the division and having the lead based on head-to-head matchup. It was huge for the Colts to come out and play and have a good game. And so I was really excited for the team, especially to get a road win in the division. We all know how difficult it's been for the Colts in recent years to get road wins in the division. And so even though they go down to Tennessee and win pretty frequently, and also Houston. So really it's just Jacksonville that they have trouble with for whatever weird reason.
Have you ever been to Jacksonville?
I've driven through it once. It didn't feel great.
That's what I'm saying. You didn't stop for gas or nothing. Like if you didn't stop for gas in Jacksonville, you know why. It's got this weird mugginess and it smells. And you just know, like, yeah, I feel like I'm from out of town. Like, that's just Jacksonville.
I feel like I don't belong here.
Yeah. I feel like when you go to someone's house, you just feel like this house isn't nice enough for how hot it is. Like, I like those people. They were family of mine, but like, their house wasn't that nice and it was awful dang hot. But yeah. Phillip Rivers had himself a pretty dang good ball game. And by the way, I wanted to point out, a lot of people have been complaining about Phillip Rivers' play. Not doing bad, man. In a lot of categories, Phillip Rivers is above par. The only real exception is throwing touchdowns. And again, I maintain that I'm going to keep telling the same joke till somebody laughs at it, that I'm just shocked a man with like a dozen kids is having problems scoring. Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Was that good? That was a pretty solid courtesy laugh. I mean,
yeah.
Real laugh.
Yeah. No, I appreciate the courtesy laugh. I just... I want that joke to work so bad, but I feel like
he really does. Like you feel like Phillip Rivers could really put it home.
Apparently,
it would seem that he can, but it just doesn't seem that he can.
Apparently, come on. But yeah, no. the difference between being the least sacked human I've ever seen. I think he's been knocked down like 7 times all year. That's what it feels like. And they've played at a high level against almost every team they've played, with the except really of Jacksonville, just played like absolute garbage. But if you really think about it, their losses can be attributed to missing key players. Costanzo in one game, Hilton in another, and you directly attribute their losses, those losses, to their absences, in my eyes.
Yeah, and then, like, the first game of the season with Jacksonville, they came in cocky. And
yeah, they played too much off coverage, thinking they were going to make up for it with their athleticism, and That's not how the NFL works. This is an inches league, remember? Like, you know, there's a reason Jonathan Taylor is being compared unfavorably, of course, to Trent Richardson. It's not a good reason. It's just a game of inches, and right now he's not making the right read on some of these reads, and you can clearly see it. You know, they got a big hole for him. If he takes this right hole, it collapses. If he takes the left hole, it's just wide open, and he takes the right hole and runs into a pile of people. Eventually, he's going to hit pay dirt. It's just a matter of – it's a feel thing. I don't know if – you know, I'm making these mostly jokes. My wife and I had a good night tonight. I'm making mostly jokes. But if you've ever played Madden, they finally fixed – in my opinion, rushing the football to the point where you can where you're at the decision point and where you can see a running lane closing and you can see one that's wide open, and you know, you just jam the right thumbstick at 10 o'clock and make that cut and take that right line. And I just think Jonathan Taylor, you know, as he continues to get reps, eventually gets to the point where he sticks his foot in the ground and makes the right decision. He's off to the races. And then everybody's saying, oh, who, Marlon, who, you know what I mean? But the reality is he's getting those hard yards now. And I feel like that's going to bear fruit for him in the future. And I really think this Colts backfield, you just like to keep it together for one more season, 'cause I really feel like they could be something special. If you had Mac, Taylor, Hines, and Wilkins, like, all playing, that just is so much speed and power at the running back position. It'd just be hard to beat on that alone. And that's not even to talk about Michael Pittman Jr. having his – is that his first game over 100 yards, I believe? 7 catches? Yeah.
Well, 101 yards. Like his third game total.
Yeah. Missed some time, but you know, for all the questions I've gotten about players, Jonathan Taylor and Michael Pittman, I want to make sure I talked about them at length because people had been asking me about them, by the way, in case anyone wondered how Jared's brain works. But people would ask me about Michael Pittman and said, you know, based on how I've spoken about the Colts offense in the past, so – there, we do have listeners, and they do remember what we say, brother. It's crazy.
Wait, what?
Yeah! But somebody commented that Michael Pittman didn't fit the description of what I had described as the ideal receiver for the Colts.
Well, that's, it might not have been what you said, but I said he was the perfect one.
And I said, well, you don't often get to draft Reggie Wayne twice.
Yeah, I'd say he's a little different than Reggie Wayne, but he's such a good player. Like,
he's going to be a good number two wide receiver.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. And I think that he could develop into a number one. But he's actually a better blocker than Reggie Wayne was. Reggie Wayne was a lot of flash coming out of Miami. And, like, he was able to get he was able to get single coverage a lot of times because you had Marvin Harrison, you had Dallas Clark, you had Edger and James, so you couldn't focus on Reggie Wayne. Michael Pittman, at this point, with T.Y. Hilton being hampered, he's going to get a little bit more coverage than what Reggie Wayne got when Reggie Wayne, his first couple of years in the league. And so in terms of, like, after the play, explosiveness, I think Michael Pittman might be a little bit more explosive than Reggie Wayne. Michael Pittman, and go back to January, guys, listen to the podcast, all those episodes, and we talk about wide receivers, and I will tell you, Michael Pittman is the perfect wide receiver for the Colts, and I was so excited after they drafted him. And I'm glad that this week against Tennessee in a big game, on a short week, you got to see that talent really shine, and you saw that explosiveness. You saw the plays that he can make after the catch. and how they're going to try to start really manufacturing touches for him. It's similar to the way that they used Paris Campbell to start the season. Paris Campbell obviously is a freak athlete, much more athletic than Michael Pittman, but it's a similar style in how they use it. I think they're probably going to try to keep sneaking DeMichael Harris in that more Paris Campbell style role, hoping that Paris Campbell can come back and play. But yeah, I was really excited about this week with the Colts and beating Tennessee. One of the big things that we should continue to harp on is how well the defense plays in second halves of games.
Oh yeah.
Tennessee was believe winning the game at halftime 13-17, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. And they didn't score again. The Colts rattled off, I want to say 24 unanswered. And special teams was just clicking. You saw the defense really play well. You saw the offense play well enough. You saw them start to throw the ball around, mix it up. I think that this team, if they continue to grow and continue to develop, this team can be just absolutely dominant and can be a real problem for teams, for other teams coming down the stretch. Their defense and their ability to stop the run really, really provides a different type of opponent for a lot of teams. They're not used to the Colts specifically being able to make people stop, like on defense, to just stop an offense cold, especially in the running game. You know, you've seen the Colts getting eaten up all year in the passing game. But once that defensive line really starts getting their act together and really starts hitting their flow, you see the quarterbacks have less time. You see the defensive ends being able to get in there and get home. You see the cornerbacks being able to make a play on the ball. You see them gain confidence because they're able to make that quick strike on the ball and be able to stop that play. And so I'm excited for the team. I do think that they're going to start mixing it up more in terms of the backfield. And so they're going to continue to try to give Jonathan Taylor touches. He obviously didn't get a lot of touches this past week. He had, seven carries, two catches. And so he had nine total touches. But Nyheim Hines was just an absolute nightmare.
On his birthday.
Defense. Yeah, on his birthday. He scored two touchdowns on his birthday. And he is an X factor for this Colts offense, similar to the way, and we've talked about this before, but similar to the way that the Chargers used Darren Sproles. And also, I believe, how the Eagles used Darren Sproles. And so similar to the way that they used to use Darren Sproles in those offenses, is how you see Nyheim Hines, and he is such a mismatch because you can't put a linebacker on him and you don't want to bring a safety down to cover him because then you're going to have a linebacker on a tight end. And either way, it's a mismatch for the Colts, and Phillip Rivers is smart enough to recognize that mismatch and he will take advantage of it. It's not like how Jacoby Brissett was last year, where Jacoby Brissett would have the mismatch and then he'd be late to throw. Phillip Rivers is throwing that ball before a guy comes out of his break.
Right.
And because he knows where that guy is going to be. He trusts his arm. He trusts the players. And that's the main difference between the Colts offense last year and this year, is competency at the quarterback position. And you're able to see them really string together a couple good games in terms of offense. I'm excited to see, how they go. I shouldn't say string together a couple good games. They weren't great against Baltimore. After the Jonathan Taylor fumble. But I'm really hoping this mini bye gives them an opportunity to really kind of shore things up. So then going into Green Bay, they're able to reestablish that running game. I wanted them to give more touches to Jonathan Taylor still. And I know people might not like that because he averaged 1.7 yards per carry this past game. But if you look at it, he had two catches for 25 yards. So get him some space. Stop running. Like, for whatever reason this year, running between the tackles has not worked for the Colts.
And I think it's because teams know that if we don't eat up the A-gap on either side, they're going to kill us. Like, they're just going to run the ball down our throat. So they make sure that they're soaking up the gap between the guards on either side. I have a feeling. And they're leaving the B-gap open. And it's I'm literally saying the same thing. I'm just flipping it around and saying, like, they've been running a little more effectively to the outside with these powers. I like these little fake dive pitch away. I love the jet sweep. I've always been I've been playing NCAA football since the 90s. The jet sweep was the play that when it came to NCAA football, it changed your offense. Because so often you're motioning just to figure out, are they in man or zone? That's all you get out of it. They can change the play after that, after you motion. Then you wasted your motion. But with the jet sweep, sometimes you make them eat it. And that's kind of how I see the Colts are kind of it's such a beautiful thing as a lover of data, right? I love this math nerdy stuff. A lot of people in media were talking about the Colts going for it like three times in a row on the same drive. And people were texting me asking me what the hell is going on with the Colts. And the answer to all of this and why it was sensationalized, I'll never know, is when you know you got them, you go for it. That's just the rules of football. And I can tell you that every offensive player knew before the ball was down that they were going for it. I can promise you that everyone in that offense knew already that they were just going for it. We're just going for it, pinning our ears back and going for it. And that's a sign of a confident team. And when the defense, I'm saying it now at 6-3, and I guess we've kind of been saying it all along, but at 6-3 atop the AFC South, you do not want to play this team in the playoffs. I'm telling you now. Because their defense is going to give their offense a lot of opportunity, and they're going to get the ball with decent field position. Their specialist teams, I try to think of the Colts in terms of the rest of the NFL too. So when I say the Colts special teams are more wired tight than a lot of these teams in the NFL, and the Colts are a lot more disciplined than a lot of these teams in the NFL, you don't want to play this team in the playoffs. You sure as hell don't want to play them on Sunday, but you really don't want to play this team in the playoffs. Because I get it, a lot of people are going to say, but Jared, look at that dumpster fire 2 weeks ago against the Ravens. And I acknowledge that. I raise you this road to victory in Tennessee. Dude, a month ago, like, first of all, not a single major media outlet picked the Colts to win that football game. We both did. And then when you really think about it, it's which would you have rather won? And a lot of people are going to say, I would have rather won the Baltimore game, Jared. Not I. That victory on Thursday did so much for it. Like, it wasn't so much like weight off your shoulders like the election has been, but it is definitely, I'm a lot more confident in saying, like, looking at the schedule, I was a little concerned about the Packers game. Looking at the schedule, I keep looking ahead to the Steelers, right? And saying, you know what? They're starting to look beatable. And that's a good feeling. I'm not going to say it yet or at all, but necessarily, but that the Colts are just going to come out and beat the Packers. But I will say I'm a lot less scared of the Packers when Devontae isn't there. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they're an entirely different offense.
Yeah. So similar to the Colts, they without Devontae Adams, it's just not nearly as potent. And that makes, for me, even Devontae being questionable.
I was just wanted to throw out there he's limited in practice today, so they still want him to play on Sunday.
Yeah.
What Devontae Adams does is so dependent on his feet and his ankles. Like, he is such a precise route runner, and that's the way that he gets open, that having a pretty significant ankle injury, that's going to slow him down quite a bit. Now, you're still going to have to shade coverage, but still, he's not the same player.
Right, and you can look at the Packers' defense as a liability, as much as the loss of Devontae Adams affects them. The Packers haven't been fantastic on defense. I mean, they're pretty good. Yeah, that's what you'd think, but you look at a lot of the numbers, man. They like give up a whole more yard of play than the Colts. When you look at turnovers, the Packers are 30th in the NFL in turnovers. Let's see. I look at touchdowns. Pretty good, actually. They've allowed the Packers 14 to the Colts 11. So they're like still top 10. So they are decent in a lot of categories, but on the whole, I got them somewhere around 18th in the league. And again, that's looking at Pro Football Reference and sorting a lot of these statistics, and then just kind of taking the average. And frankly, that's where the Colts were last year, is around that 16th to 18th spot in the NFL for defense. And just like you said, man, that's not what I thought of the Packers defense early on in the season, but that's certainly kind of where they've kind of petered out, as it were.
Yeah, it's really surprising, like, where the Packers are in terms of as a team.
Yeah.
Because obviously they had the questionable move in the draft, taking Jordan Love at the end of the first round, trading up to get Jordan Love in the first round when they really needed a wide receiver, because they don't have any beyond Devontae Adams. And if Devontae Adams goes down, the entire offense has changed for Green Bay. And that's been proven every single time they've played without Devontae Adams this year. They've been just a complete anemic offense. And so, yeah, I'm just – their defense, though, like, they've got good players. I don't know what – I just don't get it.
You want me to tell you? I'll tell you what the problems are. They do not generate enough quarterback pressures. Statistically, comparative to the number one team, the Steelers, the Packers generate half of the pressure that the Steelers do. And they're 30th in that category. And then the percentage, like how frequently they're able to pressure a quarterback, they're bottom five in the league. So they're really just not applying frequent enough pressure to a quarterback to make people scared not to just open up our playbook and you know what I mean? And then it makes me smile, because it's like, damn, our defense is good. The Colts have the fewest missed tackles in the NFL, again, per Pro Football Reference, fewest tackles in the NFL. The Packers have twice as many missed tackles. So it's like, yeah, they got a good defense on paper, and then it's like, on what paper? Because the paper I'm looking at is saying they're allowing, let's see, a really high completion percentage. So they're allowing opposing quarterbacks to catch the ball about 68% of the time. pretty good about limiting yards after the catch. Let's see here. And they've only got 4 interceptions. That's a problem. And they have only generated, 20 sacks. But the Steelers, comparatively, again, have generated 36. So when you think about what an effective defense looks like, again, we use the Steelers, not the Colts, because the Steelers are the number one defense in the NFL. But when I say things like the Packers generate half the pass rush that the Steelers do, this bodes well for the Colts offense. Because if there's any, first of all, let me lead with, there isn't anyone else in the NFL that I would rather see with time to pass than Phillip Rivers, because he's kind of fun to watch when he's comfortable.
I want to say something really quick. I don't think he's at all, because I still hate his throwing motion.
I don't like his throwing motion either, but he's like, when he's comfortable and he's dealing, he's fun to watch. Because it looks weird, but it's getting the job done, you know? And that's what I'm saying. Like, if they're not going to generate pressure and he's just going to have the time to do whatever he wants, Colts should really take advantage of the porous pass defense the Packers have. And obviously, you know, the Colts defense is going to show up. And, you know, last week, you know, Thursday, they're talking all this mess about Derrick Henry, and I get it. He got us for 100 yards. It's the first 100-yard rusher. Is that the first 100-yard rusher Frank Reich has allowed?
I think Derrick Henry is the only 100-yard rusher the Colts have, or only rusher the Colts have given up 100 yards to, because I think he's done it in 2 separate games. Mm-hmm. And the only reason he did it in the one prior was because he had like a 50-60-70-yard run in garbage time.
Mm-hmm.
Where like they were trying to run out the clock and he just got a hole and took off.
Yeah, on Thursday, Derrick Henry had 19 carries for 103 yards. His longest rush was 20 yards, which means he had 18 carries for 83 yards, which is 4.61 yards per carry. I'd say that is, for all that Derrick Henry brings to the table, holding him under 5 yards a carry is an accomplishment. And I say that sort of tongue in cheek, thinking the Colts defense isn't going to let that happen twice in a season. And so that's an interesting position to be in. And that's more of like, that's just how the Colts defense is. Like, you may get them one time, but you aren't going to do that to them twice. They're just different. They're just built different. I think in addition, so we kind of spoke briefly about their pass defense. Let's see. Rush defense. Bottom of the barrel in the NFL. So, man, again, just kind of disappointing. And again, this is rush defense. They allow 100 yards a game, 4.6 yards a carry. Comparatively, Colts only allow 3.5 yards a rush, which is, like, really good. Again, I think a lot of personnel on paper look good for the Packers, but when you put it all out there, this is a beatable defense, and it's not the same as playing against the Ravens, who have a great defense and a capable offense, right? Well, a great offense and great defense. They're playing against a Packers team with a potent offense, right? It has great potential. But their defense is, you know, a lemon, if all things considered, right? Mm-hmm. You pay full retail for a lot of those boys, and they're just not that. And, of course, I'm saying all of this, putting my foot in my mouth, because I kind of can sell where my head's at. I think that I absolutely think the Colts win this game. I'm looking at the kicking game now. Middle of the league for the Packers in the kicking game. 11 for 13. So they've missed a couple field goals. Let's see.
What I think could be interesting for the Colts is if they're able to consistently get pressure on punts, and make it so punters have to think about that.
Yeah, make it an issue.
Yeah, like you've had certain teams over the years that you always kind of worried about either punting to them and getting it to their returner. Like whenever you saw DeSean Jackson back there, you got a little worried. For those old Colt fans, you know, Dante Hall with the Kansas City Chiefs, Devin Hester with the Chicago Bears, you didn't want to kick to those guys. And then you had teams that were just good on special teams, where you always, like Baltimore Ravens, for years and years and years, were good on special teams.
Yep.
And they would take advantage of it. Chicago Bears, they were good on defense and special teams. Right. It's one of those things where it kind of feels a lot like Chris Ballard is recreating that.
Went to the
that.
Super Bowl, by the way.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying is he's trying to recreate that Chicago Bears team with the Colts. And so far, he's done a pretty darn good job of it. You know, you've got an upgrade at quarterback, which realistically was the whole reason the Bears lost to the Colts in the Super Bowl. Is you know, they had, gosh, what is it? Why can't I think of it? Name now, Kyle Orton. That was one of them. But then, yeah. Jay Cutler, maybe?
Rex
Grossman. That was the question. I was like, man, why is his name slipping me right now? Oh, because he's not anybody you would ever think of as an NFL quarterback.
Right.
And so that was the big issue with the Bears. And now the Colts have a competent quarterback that can at least not lose a game. And if he has to, go win it. You saw that with the Bengals game where that's one of the things we talked about at the beginning of the season multiple times is, you know, we know that Phillip Rivers isn't likely going to lose you a lot of games. He cost them the Ravens game.
Mm-hmm. Allegedly.
And the pick six and then that inadvertent safety. Now I'm getting my games all mixed up.
Yeah.
Okay. So Phillip Rivers cost him a game. Earlier this season, cost him potentially the Jacksonville game with two really bad interceptions that he threw. But outside of that, Phillip Rivers has been really, really accurate and far better at putting the Colts in a position to win, or to win the play, than what Jacoby Brissett did. And I think that's the biggest thing that we need to take away from Phillip Rivers this year and thus far is that he is a significant upgrade over Jacoby Brissett, with the lone exception being the QB sneak play. And that is the only play I want to see Jacoby Brissett ever on the field for the Colts and Phillip Rivers taken off.
Right.
Period. That's it. But yeah, like I feel like Colts fans, we've had, you know, decades of fantastic quarterback play. Just absolutely fantastic quarterback play. And then we got put in a tough spot.
Yeah. I'm sitting here looking at...
It was the Browns game. That was the one I was thinking of, where it, like, Phillip Rivers cost him 9 points because he threw a pick six.
Yep.
And then had the...
Inadvertent safety
that he just kind of flung the ball up.
Yep.
That's the one.
The good news here is if you get in the red zone against the Packers, you're scoring 67-68% of the time, bottom quarter of the league. But they're also like top. I like statistics tell you everything. The Packers are really good on third down, but if they don't stop you, they're giving up a touchdown. Like, that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Is if they, you know, and it brings me back to the Ravens game. And I get it when people listen to this, they're like, Jared, holy. The reason I keep bringing that up is similarly, the Ravens are really good on third down. And you also don't score touchdowns when you get them in a red zone. No, that's not true. The Ravens are really good on third down and really bad when you get in the red zone against them. They're like 76% to score touchdown. So that's what kind of gives me pause about this game and makes me think that it'll be close, is because the Packers are good on third down, 39% to convert against them on third down. And then lastly, as far as the data stuff, look at points per drive. And the Packers are middle of the league. So this tells me the Colts should have a little better of an offensive output than they've had the last 2 weeks, which says a lot given that this past week they had like over 400 yards of offense. So, and we did talk about this last week, that although this is a tough stretch of games, yeah, Titans, Packers, Titans, that's a rough stretch. These are all winnable and beatable secondaries. And then we've just kind of gone over the rest of the data here. Turnover percentage, Packers are 29th in the league. Conversely, the Colts are 8th. I also noticed the Colts give up 19 points a game. The Packers defense gives up about 24, 25 points. So if you're just going by the numbers, these things to me stick out. So I hope if anybody is listening to this and you're wondering, like, why is Jared sitting here and looking at these websites and telling us about these numbers? These are the kind of important numbers that should help you when you're kind of prognosticating how a game's gonna. All the players do this. They visualize what's gonna happen in the game. I'm hopefully
it to gives kind of you provide a better expectation.
Yeah.
Like that's what it is. It gives you a better expectation on what you can expect based on what's happened thus far this season. And that's where these stats really come into play, is, you know, coming into today and before talking about these stats, you know, on paper, quote unquote, with the players that they have, the Packers should have a really good defense.
Right.
And yet they don't this year, mm-hmm. for whatever reason. But the fact is they don't, and they haven't been able to stop teams in the red zone. They haven't been able to, if they don't get you three and out, they're done for pretty much. And you're scoring touchdowns. And with the Colts, hopefully they're able to stress the Packers secondary enough to be able to take advantage of that. And I think they will. And this is something that you talked about earlier in the episode, talking about with the jet sweeps, with different things to manipulate the defense and try to get them moving one way while you're keeping their eyes at one place while moving another, and trying to just kind of get them off their game, make them take a second. Because if they take a half a second, take a full second to try to figure out, hey, what just happened? They're already beat. And that's how fast the NFL game is.
Yeah. And I sat here and dogged their, to sort of shift gears on that defensive conversation for the Packers, while I was sitting here thinking about, man, how in the world can the Packers possibly win this game? Just look at offensive statistics between the Packers and the Chiefs. These might be the two best functioning, best looking offenses the NFL's ever seen in the same season. Aaron Rodgers has been fantastic. I believe 26 touchdowns and 3 interceptions without looking that up. Let me look that up because now I feel dumb. And your boy. 26 and 3. Super good. Scoring a lot of points. Things I notice. Sort of middle of the league-ish. They're in that kind of second tier percentage to score. But otherwise, great in all other categories. But they're just sort of, they're sort of boom-bust, I suppose, in that. But again, the Colts are too. But yeah, their passing offense is outstanding. Let me see here. Yeah. Just so everyone knows, Philip Rivers is completing a higher percentage of his passes than Aaron Rodgers. Just like we've been talking about, only 11 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. But again, something to think about that I think the Colts are going to have to get away from in order to win games this year. And I think they've realized that. And how do we know that? The Philip Rivers threw the ball 39 times last week. That's how we know the Colts are going to have to win the ball throwing it and possibly to running backs and trying to get a lot of good matchups, because you've missed T.Y., you're missing Paris Campbell, you're missing Marlon Mack, these marquee every down players. And since these guys are out, these difference makers, we've been spreading the ball around and everyone's kind of getting to touch the rock. It's important that the Colts don't turn the ball over. So that's one of the things I'll look at next is turnovers and how likely, let's see. And that tells you pretty much the whole game, right? Like when you look at offense, you look at turnover percentage, and they just don't turn the ball over on offense. So how do the Packers beat the Colts? By playing sound defense, winning on third down, forcing the Colts to punt and kick field goals, and then being their typical efficient selves on offense, which, again, I think we've all kind of figured this out. That's not going to happen for just about anybody other than Gardner Minshew, apparently has the voodoo on the Colts. But other than that, I feel like the Colts have played sound football in the secondary since the Minshew game, and have otherwise limited, like, what did Tannehill had like 149 yards or something on 27 attempts. I mean, Lamar Jackson had a good game, but we also kind of dared him to beat us through the air. But yeah, I think this is going to be a super close game. It's a 2-point contest, so the Colts are a 2-point favorite. Home team gets 3 points. This means Packers are supposed to win by 1. If you're wondering out there in the universe, every Thursday, I try to wait as late as I can. I wait until the injury reports come out. I try to take into account as much information as possible. I write a little betting piece. It's not meant to be like gambling advice, but what I do is I kind of tell you who the home team is, what the spread is. And so this week, the Colts are a 2-point favorite at home. And we talked about this old gambling adage that you get 3 points for being the home team. And when you take that away, the Colts are supposed to lose by 1. So if we were kind of betting on that game, you would take the Packers because they're getting 2 points. Just as like a general statement. Of course, that's not how I see it. With Davante Adams, he doesn't even have to be a no-go for me. For him being questionable means I don't expect him to take on the same sort of workload. And I think, always try to put myself in the person's shoes when I'm talking about him, how Aaron Rodgers struggles is he warms up, and all during warmups, Davante Adams is fresh. And then what happens is that Davante Adams comes out and catches a ball, and then he catches another one, He catches another one, and then in the fourth one, he gets a stiff arm to the chest, and then he sits out the rest of the game, and Aaron Rodgers doesn't have a good enough timing with any of the other receivers, and the Colts beat the Packers on third down five or six times over the course of the game because they know that they can contain Davante Adams. He's either not playing or he's limited because he ate a forearm shiver. Because that's just how football works, right? You see this happen. I don't know if anybody's caught the vibe yet, but the Colts defense comes out and smacks you in the mouth. And you get chin checked real early in a football game. And if you don't see it, it's like watching rabbits. You start seeing heads starting to look around in plays like there's ghosts running around the football field. And that's because this Colts defense will come out and punch you in the face and start a fight, but not actually starting a fight. Like they're playing football the correct way. They're hitting you full speed. We're not pulling up. We're not trying to save people. It's not how this works. They're playing defense. They're smacking people in the mouth. And when it sets the tone in the game. And then when the Colts offense comes out and their offensive line is brutal too, it has a psychological effect on your opponent. So for everybody out there that's like, man, the Colts are kind of boring sometimes. They don't put the ball at risk, Jared. They don't throw the deep fade. They're not doing all these things. They're marching the ball down the field. They're controlling the time of possession. And me, I'm as happy as I could be watching the Colts on a Sunday afternoon control the ball for like 45 minutes and beat a team mercilessly. Like, I'm completely fine with this. Right. Of course, I miss the could literally score from anywhere on any down offense that's what we've known. Right. For the majority of the time I've even been a Colts fan, offense has been an afterthought. Right. You just kind of knew the offense is going to do its thing. It's really going to come down. Cause, I mean, can you imagine if we were doing this podcast a decade ago? Or more, what would we have been saying? Well, you know the offense is going to do its thing, right? It's that defense that I'm worried about. And how weird is it now we're sitting here saying, like, man, the offense needs to do its thing because I don't know about this defense. You know, we know this defense is going to show up. We just don't know which offense is going to show up, right?
Sorry, so I thought that was a rhetorical question.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, sometimes you ask questions and I was like, oh yeah, that's an obvious answer. I don't even really need to respond to that.
I like asking the questions that are super loaded. That way the person's like,
Do you want? Are you serious?
Do I need to answer that?
Like, or just, is this a legit question?
I that one in, right, Jared? Like,
yeah, like I mean I was listening, and then I was like, oh yeah. Oh shoot. He wants me to respond. Oh, okay. Hold on. Click unmute. All right. Hey, I'm back. Yeah. And I'll be interested to see how this game goes. I think that the Packers, you know, with a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, they're always going to be that he's going to be able to keep him in the game.
Oh yeah.
And I think the Colts do get a benefit from playing at home. Here more than just the 3 points. I will say I found an interesting stat this week, or I saw it on the Twitter, so who knows if it's real or fake, it was winning percentages of home teams in the past like 10 years or versus this year.
Mm-hmm.
So you obviously we all know that every NFL stadium is at limited capacity of some sort, some without fans really at all.
Right.
And they found that in the past, the winning percentage of home teams was right around like 59-60%. However, this year, the winning percentage of home teams without fans is about 49%. That's a pretty significant drop.
Right.
That's at least one game every week that a home team would normally win goes to the visiting team.
Right.
And so I think that was just an interesting stat. although I will say I think the Colts do get an advantage playing at home more so than any other team, at least given the way that their team is built for speed and for quickness, specifically at the defensive line. And I would like to say, again, pay Grover Stewart his money.
Right, pay that man his money.
Pay him his money. He deserves it. He has been playing out of his mind. He should be right at that DJ Reader level, if not making a little bit more. DJ Reader got, want to say, like a 5-year, $42 million contract with like 24 guaranteed. I'm pulling that off the top of my head, so I may or may not be right on that. Sounds right. But 24 guaranteed. I think Grover Stewart's probably looking at like probably similar numbers, maybe a little bit more on the guaranteed side. Chris Ballard can, with the amount of cap space he's got, he can literally sign anybody that he wants and still be well under the cap, even if the cap pulls back a little bit next year. And so pay Grover Stewart his money. I want to make sure that that's very clear. And if you don't take away anything else from this podcast, I want you to take away that. But yeah, I think overall this will come down to, can the Colts offense put some points on the board early? And if they can, you're putting the ball in Aaron Rodgers' hands to win the game, but you're also trying to have the Packers offensive line protect him for long periods of time, and they're just not as good as they have been in the past. And I'd see the Colts really taking advantage of that. They're also supposed to get Kamoko Touré back this week, the Colts are. And he was activated. They waived Sheldon Day, which is a little bit surprising in terms of moves. I thought Sheldon Day had played okay, but Taylor Stallworth had really kind of taken over his role on the defensive line since Sheldon Day got hurt early on. I could see Day coming back on the practice squad. But Kamoko Touré comes back, and I'm really excited to see him in action again, because he was, if everybody remembers, he was an absolute beast the first 5 weeks of the season last year, where he had the highest sack percentage and pressure rate in the NFL before his ankle injury. To have him now with a legitimate pairing in the middle that can keep blockers off of him, like, he could legit be just an absolute game changer for this defense going into the final stretch, going to a really important stretch of season. Coming here with Green Bay and Tennessee. And I had said before that if the Colts can come out of this stretch going 2-2 or 3-1 with both of those wins, with at least two wins over Tennessee, they're going to be sitting pretty. And remember, Tennessee plays Baltimore, who just had a really terrible game against New England this past week. So they're going to come in motivated to play Tennessee. If Baltimore beats Tennessee, the Colts beat Green Bay, and then the Colts win next week against Tennessee when they host them at home, the Colts effectively have a 3-game lead in the division. Because not only do you have a 2-game lead in the standings, because at that point the Colts would be 8-2 or 8-3, and the Titans would be 6-5. But the Colts would also hold the season tiebreaker by winning both of those games. So it's an effect, it's effectively a 3-game margin for the Colts. And that leaves you with, you know, the Colts, I believe, still have, you know, Jacksonville to play, and they've got you know, Houston to play twice. So you've got games where it's unlikely that the Colts would lose enough games to really put them in trouble. They've got, if 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So they would effectively be 3 games up with 5 to play.
Right.
And those games would be alternating home and away with, you know, the Texans, or they go at Houston, at Las Vegas. Then they host Houston. They go at the Steelers, which is going to be a rough game at the end of December in Pittsburgh. And then they host the Jaguars. So every one of their last 4 games is played on a place that is either warm or indoors, with the exception of Pittsburgh.
Right.
And so, like, the Colts could literally run this. Because at that point, at the end of the season, Pittsburgh might be sitting at number one.
And not need to actually...
And not need those last two games.
Yeah. And that was kind of where my head was while you were talking. I was like, oh, man, you know, Pittsburgh is undefeated right now. And it could get to the point where, you know, Colts really vying for that playoff spot and willing to put it all out there on the line. And the Steelers could say, you know, we may see them in the playoffs and we're not going to lose our seeding to them, right? Because I don't think the Colts, obviously, Steelers are 9-0 right now. Colts are 6-3, so we're 3 games behind. I don't think the Steelers lose between now and facing the Colts. So you could put that down and say, I wrote it down. I don't think the Steelers lose. And then so they come in that game potentially like, what, 13-14-0? May not need to play them. Let the Colts get that 10th win or 11th win or 12th win, whatever. They're still not taking the seeding from us. I can promise you, though, with Mike Tomlin, that's certainly not going to happen. They're a coach every game to win every game. But it's, the thought's certainly nice. Like, I would love it if somebody would sit their best players against me, you know, because being Colts fans, that's what we've done. You know, it got to the point in Peyton's career where they're pulling starters when they're, you know, starting seasons 14-0, you know. So let's do.
Look at the NFC versus the AFC right now. You have 10 teams in the AFC that are 6-3 or better. In the NFC, you've got 6 teams that are 6-3 and better. And the number 4 seed in the NFC is a team that currently has a just under 40% winning percentage, which is the Philadelphia Eagles at 3-5-1, who would host a home playoff game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And so, like, that's just, it's kind of mind blowing. Like, if I was in the NFC East, I would just try to lose out because you're not going to do anything once you get to the playoffs.
Right. You're going to play in the one
seed. Like, and you're, well, not only, now you're going to be playing the 5 seed because you'd be hosting that.
But oh, right.
Not only that, but you'd be going in and making the playoffs with a pretty substantial losing record. Unless if somebody can string together wins, that a record that would normally put you in like the top 8 picks in the draft. And if you make the playoffs, you are locked in the 20s for the entire draft.
It's tough.
So like right now, if you went league wide, like you know, 1, 2, 3. The Eagles will be picking 12th right now at 3-5-1, based on their record. But if given that they would make the playoffs, they would be picking at least 21st, or at worst, or best 21st, if they got knocked out in the first round. Although they did expand the playoffs this year by one team, so I think it'd be at worst 20th.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping you were considering, the expanded playoffs when you were talking about that. You want to do our little NFL pick 'em and get out of here?
Yeah, it sounds like a good idea.
Well, let's do it then. Hey, Steven, tomorrow at Thursday Night Football, might as well just call this game of the week, right? The Arizona Cardinals play at the Seattle Seahawks. Who do you think wins that game?
I'm going to go with the Seahawks.
I agree. Honestly. You're just very unlikely to beat Seattle at home.
Well, and at home on a short week.
And then, hey, on Sunday, the Eagles play at the Browns. Who you got there?
I'll take the Browns.
Same. I don't trust the Eagles, man. They stink.
Mm-mm. No, they just lost to the Giants.
By 10.
Yeah.
The Giants, it was like Daniel Jones and who, right? And then, hey, the Falcons play at the Saints. Who you got? Saints may be trotting out Jameis Winston. Who do you think wins this game?
I still think it's the Saints. I just think that they're so much better.
Yeah, better on both sides.
The Falcons. Yeah.
And then the Bengals play at the Washington football team. Who you got there?
This is interesting. I think I'll probably take the Bengals. Because I like Joe Burrow.
Mm-hmm.
But this game, I think this literally could go either way. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I'm in the pocket like Burrow. I think the Bengals, I agree with you, get a big road win, and this elevate. This is one of those wins you need as a young quarterback. Love Alex Smith. Alex Smith and his comeback is incredible. Had a great game last week. And then, hey, the Lions play at the Panthers. Who do you think wins that game?
I don't care.
Yeah.
No,
I think
probably the Lions. I'll say the Panthers. Wait, is Christian McCaffrey playing?
No. So, no CMC. Teddy Bridgewater is banged up. Lions, it's just like you said, who cares? Lions are 5-5. Steelers play at the Jags. Steelers are a 10-point favorite, so no, but don't go crazy on me there, but I'm pretty sure we both know who was winning that game.
Jaguars.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, wouldn't that be crazy?
Wouldn't that be?
Seriously.
They come out
Jaguars
and actually play.
Two wins. Jaguars two wins this season would be against the Colts, who are leading
Steelers.
Divisions in the Steelers. Like,
best
if they came, if somebody was talking to you after like week 10, week 11 and said, yeah, the Jaguars beat the Colts and Steelers this year, they'd be like, oh my gosh, they're like definitely leading the AFC South then. And you're like, no, those are literally the
only
two wins. Yeah, only two wins this season.
And then, hey, man, the Titans play at the Ravens. Who you got there?
I think I'm going to go with the Ravens on this, just because the Titans are not good against the run, usually. Let me rephrase. They're not good against the run in space, and that's where Baltimore can just crush you.
And I think it's playing against Baltimore is a tall task. Playing against Baltimore in Baltimore is the tallest of tasks. And for that reason, I think the Ravens get it done at home. It's just a tough place to play. I get it.
Both
no
teams
fans.
Are coming off losses. And Baltimore came off a pretty embarrassing loss to the Patriots. Like, at least Tennessee's loss was to a divisional opponent that's really good. The Patriots are not good this year. And it took a hurricane coming through, you know, Boston area, or Foxborough, Massachusetts, to really give the Patriots even a shot to win this game. Because if that's played in normal conditions, Baltimore runs them out of the stadium.
Right. And just so everyone's aware, you lose games because of weather. That happens.
And some teams just aren't good for it. The Colts, shoot, for years and years and years, the run was that the Patriots would, for the week and a half, 2 weeks leading up to the Colts game, wouldn't cut their grass because it gave the Patriots an extra advantage going in because it slowed down Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis on their rush. That is legit what they did.
You got to do what you got to do, right?
Yeah. Hey, I wouldn't be surprised. I want to go back and watch that game from last week with the Patriots and the Ravens because I feel like there's definitely some pretty substantial amount of stick-em. No, stick them on those arms because there were times where like the Ravens guys they were able to get the ball out pretty consistently, but they weren't, that ball was not budging on those Patriots players, and I'm like, this should have been a fumble in this game.
Being
as bad as it was,
right?
Anyway, I still think the Patriots are cheaters, so there's that.
And hey, nobody to blame you, there's too much evidence. And speaking of cheaters, Patriots play the Texans. I think Patriots win that game on the road.
I think the Patriots will win it too.
And then the Dolphins play at the Broncos. Who do you think wins this game?
I think the Dolphins. I really like what they've done this year. And the Dolphins, let's throw this out there, they still own Houston's first round draft pick and second round draft pick. This Houston's pick is going to be in the top five. Top seven which is why I so wanted the Colts to trade picks 33 and 42 Miami for Houston's future first round pick.
Right.
Because I knew it was going to be a top five. I said during draft season, Houston's going to have a top five, top 10 draft pick, and I really wanted to go to the Colts. So then they could draft their quarterback of the future and shove it in Houston's face, because I am a next level petty kind of person.
Yeah, I oh,
who did you want to pick to win this game? Sorry, kind of tangent.
Dolphins get a big win to Tagovailoa, 4-0 as a starter. Gets a big win this Sunday. Jets play at the Chargers. Who do you think wins this game, brother?
It's got to be the Chargers. Like, the Jets are not even trying.
No. Hey, just so everyone knows, Jets are 0-9. Come on now. Chargers get a big, big win at home. It was one of those ones where you get to just enjoy it, you know? You know, inevitably hopefully there's no going through the motions. Hopefully the Chargers take the game real serious. Because the problem I've had, and if you've listened to this podcast, you've heard me say this before, and I always end up being right, and then people message me like, that's gross. When teams aren't playing at full speed, that's when players get hurt the worst. So I will probably not watch Jets Chargers, because you're going to see something you don't want to watch. The Cowboys play at the Vikings. Andy Dalton's supposed to start for the Cowboys this week. Just letting you know.
All right, I'm going to take the Vikings.
Same. Hard so. Sell. And then, hey, Sunday Night Football this week. Not a terrible game. Chiefs play at the Raiders in the Death Star. Who wins that game?
I'm going to go on a limb and take the Raiders in this game.
Ooh, look at you. And I don't blame you. Raiders should feel pretty good at home. And the Raiders beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead already this year. I'll go ahead and take the Chiefs to get the win on the road and move to 9-1. And then Monday night, the Rams. Ooh, that's a good game. Rams should play at the Bucks. Who do you think wins this game?
I'm going to take the Bucks in this game.
Yeah, I think I'm going to take the Rams here, man.
I've tried to convince myself to take the Rams so many times, and I do it. I was going to go back and
forth on it.
I do. I take the Rams, and then I just, after the game, I was like,
here's my problem. Here's my problem. Rams are dumpster fire on the road. They're 2-3. For some reason, Sean McDermott loses his play sheet when they go on the road, and I'm kidding.
McVay.
McDermott's a Bill. But yeah, it just they're not packing the same punch on the road typically.
So now you're back to the Bucks?
Are
you
No. But here's why I'm taking the Rams though.
All right.
He's a smart cat. He knows this, and I make that statement frequently. If my dumb butt is sitting on a podcast calling it out, they know. Sean McVay knows they're doo-doo on the road. They're lacking punch on the road. They're going to play a Bucks team coming off a big win, scoring a ton of points. And I just think the Rams, first of all, they have a game wrecker in Aaron Donald. And on offense, the offense is talented enough that it gives me pause. Basically, Tampa Bay is a 4-point favorite. You get 3 for being the home team. That means Vegas says Bucks win by 1.
Say, that's a little bit tighter of a game than I thought it would be.
So, I'm just going to take the flip side of that and say Rams won a close game. But what it does is it shows you the Bucks can be beat. Because I know there's a lot of people out there that are like groaning, right? Like, oh, God, you know, Tom Brady's still in the NFL. You know, he's a vampire. He is
maybe
not.
Maybe more like Highlander than vampire. Yeah.
But the thing about
he's
it
got
is.
He's got that chiseled jaw, so I feel like he's so definitely like a sword wielder than like something that like gets and flies in the night kind of thing. You know? That's just my thoughts on it. I mean, if we're going into logical things.
I'm with you there. Tom Brady has shown you that he has an acme and he had peaks and valleys, right? But his like valley, it's getting pretty low. You know what I mean? When he puts up a dumpster fire, it's a big old smelly, stinky dumpster fire. And then, hey, on Sunday, brother, the Packers come to town and play the Colts. Again, Colts 2-point favorite at home. Home team gets 3 points. This means Vegas says Packers win by 1 on the road. Who you got?
I'm going to take the Colts in this game. I think it's going to be in that 4 to 7 point range. So I'll take the Colts and I'll put it at 24-20.
Yeah, I think as we've said in last few episodes anyway, the secondaries are exploitable in these next few contests for the Colts. And it's for that reason that they're just able to score from outside the red zone. I have confidence. And for that reason, the Colts just put up a little too many points on offense for the Packers to overcome. And I think that it's kind of going to be one of those 35-31 games. The over-under is 51.5. I'm smashing the over on that, too.
I'm apparently going under.
Yeah. But that's a chunky 50. Anything over 50 points, for me, is you always take the over. So yeah, I think there's some points scored there. They're calling this like a 27-24 game is kind of what Vegas is saying, or more like a 26-24 if you want to say 2 points, but we speak in threes, so we're thinking more like 27-24 is what Vegas says. I say it's more like a 35-31 game. I just think it's going to require more offense than normal. And I think the Colts can score with a little more frequency against the Packers defense. And the Packers have Aaron Rodgers, and that's kind of the great equalizers, right? There are players that are just transcendent, and Aaron Rodgers is one of them. You know, you got to give respect where it's due. And that isn't to say that he can't sit on the sideline and get cold. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If the Colts have their way, that's just what will happen. Aaron Rodgers will leave and he'll be like, man, I feel like I didn't do anything today. And then he looked down and he threw the ball 12 times and you're like, yes. How do you beat him? Keep him on the sideline.
Yep. That's true.
Not a terrible strategy, because that's what a lot of teams are doing. That's how the Raiders beat Patrick Mahomes, is keep him on the sideline. It works for you when your offense is lacking firepower, but not the ability to move the ball. Playing ball control offense is good for you. And with the Packers being suspects on defense, I think there's a lot of pressure on Aaron Rodgers in this offense to produce. And what do we know happens when you're under a lot of pressure to produce and you haven't made a lot of mistakes thus far, but the chink, you know, there's kinks in the armor, right? We're starting to see little things tear apart for the Packers that, you know, Davante Adams has been dominant this year. Come up a little sore, right? You're seeing that these teams are beatable. Even a 7-2 Packers team, one of the best offenses between Kansas City and Green Bay, a couple of the best offenses I've ever watched. And I just think the Colts can win on defense and then also win on offense. And that's where we'll kind of leave you. This has been episode 13, season 2. So like I said, we did 45 last year. We're on episode 13 this year. That's 58 episodes, a couple away from episode 60, which is not necessarily like a milestone or anything. I just like round numbers. My name is Jared. You can find me on Twitter @likelyalien. My co-host here, Stephen Reed at Nice Reed, R-E-E-D, Steve. You could follow the podcast at Pod Pancake. Please do rate us 5 stars wherever you do see us. Make sure you follow us. Enjoy the games this week. And again, we're going to close it just like we opened it. Wear a mask. It's not a political
Please
statement.
Be safe. It's not political. It's about keeping your friends and family and even the people that you don't know safe.
And you know, and you know what? I'm going to come out and say it because it's about time somebody did. We don't wish ill on other humans, and you really don't wish ill on other Americans. So you'll never hear me say something like, I hope you get it. I hope you don't. I hope you hear us. And even if you're off put by the message of wearing a mask, you don't like being told what to do, understand that you're doing this. It's not for you. It's for other people. It's courteous. It's the nicest thing you could do for someone is just think of them. And I'm reminded frequently as I age, I was told as a young man, frequently it is not about you. And that's not a political message either. We'll see you next week.